The following KOPN podcast is made possible by the generous donations of listeners like you. Please consider a donation to listener-supported community radio, KOPN. You can donate securely on our website at kopn.org.
You're listening to 89.5 FM KOPN Columbia, Mid-Missouri's source for in-depth news, diverse talk, and music of the world. It's more than radio, it's community radio on the web at kopn.org. Welcome to Thought Crime Radio. We are the voices for the human rights of babies, and I'm Janelle, and I'm in the studio in Columbia, Missouri with Rich.
And we are winging it today because our guest has called in sick.
Yes, our guest, Dr. Stuart Fishbein, an obstetrician from California, has come down with the flu today, unfortunately. So we send him some good healing vibes, and we're going to reschedule him. But that's the way it works, right, with community radio?
That's right.
We've never had an opportunity since the show started anyway
to just talk.
Yeah. So that's what we're going to do today. Rich has had a lot of things to say, and so have I. And we usually start out with some news items. Today in Afghanistan, the U.S. has lost 14 countrywomen soldiers, and I had a pretty rough day because I don't know where my son is. So whenever we hear that news, you know, for the next 24 to 48 hours, it's pretty torturous. It's sort of like if your child's on a bus trip, like you're on a school trip, your young child's on a school trip, and you hear that the bus has wrecked and 14 of them have died, but you're not able to get there. You're not allowed to know. You can't get there. Nobody can answer your questions. Nobody will answer your questions. And so you just have to go about your day and wait to hear no news, because no news is good news. And so you don't want the phone to ring. You don't want the doorbell to ring, because it sends terror through you. So
it's actually worse than that, because no one can explain in a coherent way, as far as I can tell, what in the world we're doing in Afghanistan. Why are they in Afghanistan? Can someone please call this station, you know, over the next hour and please explain to me why we're in Afghanistan?
I mean, really.
Seriously.
I mean, but you know what? That's like a whole series of shows right there.
I know. It's like people are used to being just told by the government that we need to do this. And the government isn't even trying to make a coherent case for this anymore. It's just like, well, it's just the way it is. We're the world's cops, you know, and so we have this obligation to sacrifice our children and our wealth and our well-being for the benefit of what? What exactly are we doing? I'd like to know.
I don't know. I've tried to wrap my head around that one for a couple of years now.
I think we're being abused. I seriously think we are being terribly exploited.
Well, what I wanted to talk about today, and sort of touch on with Dr. Fishbein, we can do anyway. And Dr. Fishbein is really outspoken right now. He's been an obstetrician for years, and he's a huge, huge supporter of the midwifery model of birth. And he does wonderful births in the hospitals in California, and he's very mother baby focused. And you know, you've written the
Munchausen obstetrics, I call it.
Yeah, so you know, and we talk about a lot about the medical field, and so I was really looking forward to having him on and getting his perspective, because I've given a lot of thought to this the last 3 years that my son has been deployed, and I've been a part of this natural birth movement. And you know, something that one of our guests talked about a few weeks ago really triggered something for me that I've been processing for quite a while. But I really looked at, and like, the one thing that my son had in an otherwise very gentle, peaceful, conscious conception, gestation, and birth, like we talk about with our guests, is he had the hospital birth. And that's, I believe that obstetrics and modern medicine, modern birth, is where we are creating deficits, dysfunctions, traumas, and the mind is being imprinted to that it's not a safe world, and there are these authorities that we always have to fight for and against.
Yeah, what is going on with that? This seems to be a very systemic, consciously planned out process of alienation from the mother, separation of the mother and baby, premature umbilical cord clamping, circumcision, isolation in distant rooms, you know, letting the baby cry its eyes out, and meanwhile they're, you know, stitching up the mother for unnecessary surgeries. This is
and episiotomy is a surgery.
Yes, episiotomy is a terribly, oftentimes terribly traumatic surgery. And it turns out the primary risk factor for severe tearing during delivery is episiotomy, and that's episiotomy is exactly the rationale for it is to prevent tearing. So what are they doing exactly? Why are they creating business for themselves? I'm sorry, I know that medicine is a sacred cow in this society, and we can't question their wisdom, but it seems to me that they have completely lost track of reality.
Yeah.
and you know, people need to start questioning some basic assumptions, you know, like, you know, not just what we're doing in Afghanistan, but what in the world are we doing to our children? And why is it that we no longer have faith in nature?
Why are we creating warriors?
In our own bodies.
Because we are creating very...
That's right.
...angry, broken... We need to talk about...
What's the deal with that?
We need to talk about the attachment of the mother and child. And one of the things in the news... I know it's not new news, but it seems to be new news in the mainstream right now, and that is that breast milk contains stem cells. And there's a site, and I'll put the link on our blog, which is www.thoughtcrimeradio.blogspot.com, but it's about this Perth scientist who made the discovery that human breast milk contains stem cells, and of course a lot of people worried this is going to be distorted again by science, and they'll start messing with brain or the stem cells in the milk. But what it tells me as a mother, and what I know, and as a woman, and as a woman who's given birth, and as a woman who's studied pre and perinatal psychology and health for 10 years, like in depth, is that after the placenta is separated from the baby, the mother's body continues to build that baby.
Yes, the breast milk really is a continuation of the umbilical cord.
So there's the physical part of it, and then in a few weeks we're going to have on Dr. Prescott, who is world renowned for his work in attachment. And maybe today we can talk about that, the mother-child attachment bond that is absolutely necessary to create a peaceful, loving, kind, self-controlling, non-boundary violating human being, a person who's empathetic. We talk about empathy a lot. You talk about empathy a lot. And, you know, we have a lot of information about the physiological aspects of it, the breast milk, and every day we learn something new about the breast milk and the whole infant period. But let's talk about
the psychology.
What happens when we break that maternal child bond? And, you know, and it's really on my heart today, because for 3 years I've been really, really grieving the loss of my child going to war. And a few weeks ago when Janice was on and she was talking about Barbara Harper, who is Water Birth International, and she was talking about when Barbara had a conscious birth, an ecstatic birth. It's not like, it's not all about having orgasms, and if you have an orgasm when you conceive a child, that you create this loving child. It's about ecstatic birth, where you're connected intimately with this other person when you conceive a child and you do it consciously. And she talked about when Barbara Harper said she looks at her child's pictures or thinks about him and her heart just sort of opens up. And Janice was talking about the neurobiology of love. When we create the neurobiology and the connections of love, and that, when she was talking about that, it made such an impact on me, because it put into perspective part of my struggle as a mother the last couple of years, because I saw my son come in at conception. It was an ecstatic, orgasmic experience, and I saw him come in, and I have loved this child, this human, beyond any love that I've ever known. And he had a very gentle gestation, His father was very loving and involved. And then we had the hospital birth. The normal, typical hospital birth where people bugged me and pestered me to take drugs, and nursing professors came in and disrupted me and got mad at me because I wouldn't let a nursing student come in, and a probe in his head, and you know,
the fetal monitor.
Yeah, and then you know.
Now let's talk about that for a second.
Well, but can I finish this?
Okay.
And then after the birth, I demanded that he not be separated from me. I kept him in the room with me and had to fight a little bit for that. Don't you want to sleep? And blah, blah, blah. And they're like, no, he's not going to be out of my sight. So, and this happens all the time where
you really
women
have to
right
put
now,
your foot down.
Women are really preparing. They're getting it. Like, oh, I need to create, you know, a healthy gestation and I want to have a healthy birth. But when you get to the hospital, it breaks down. And then we go home like we did. And I did attachment parenting like I did for all the other two as well, where we co-slept. He was breastfed till he weaned himself. He was carried. His father was a professor in a medical school, and we arranged our schedules. I started my master's program at some point in there and went two nights a week. But between the two of us, we cared for him at all times. He was only with us. We gardened and had organic foods. We did everything right that we know of. And the only thing that I keep going back to is this, what people think is so insignificant, so short, that it doesn't really matter because babies don't think or feel,
and the
they don't remember.
The experts know what they're doing, right?
But that moment, those moments of leaving the womb where we are connected with our mother and symbiotic with her, the mother's body is regulating everything. The mother's body is building that. And now we know the mother's body continues to build the baby after the baby is out, after the placenta is separated. She continues to make stem cells. She can walk into a room. A breastfeeding mother will walk into the room, and her body will scan the environment and see what's there, and then her body will make milk to protect that baby in that new environment with new germs. Mm. I mean, that is a superpower.
Yes.
Women have a superpower. They make, they create, and they sustain, and they maintain. And like, what is happening in this whole process? Where is the black hole? If you hear people talk about birth, they say pre and post birth. No matter who, no matter where you're talking about it, there's prenatal and postnatal. We have a blackout here.
Yes.
Where it's okay to do everything that they told you not to. You know, you have to stay on your back. They told you not to sleep on your back. You're supposed to stay hydrated. You know, they take food and water away from you. Everything that they've told you to do, don't do drugs. Don't even take, you know, if you have a cold or if a woman has a, like I had a tooth issue and had to go to the dentist, you know, I was really careful. But then when I go to the hospital, they're like, do you want some drugs? Do you want some drugs? Oh, it'll make you feel better. You know, on and on and on.
Don't eat or drink for hours, you know. Stay on your back. Let us attach all these devices. And the drug,
it's okay because it won't hurt the baby. The drugs won't hurt the baby because the medical field says so?
The medical field knows better than to give that advice. And if any doctor is still giving the advice that these obstetrical drugs make no impact on the baby, they simply are ignorant. They're just ignorant. I mean, the research is in. They know that obstetrical drugs cause an increased rate of addiction to both stimulants and depressants in the adult who survives this kind of pathologized birth. They know it.
They don't seem to.
That's right. It's not filtering down. There's a lot that's not filtering down about birth that is. You know, so much of what they do is contraindicated by their own studies.
And you know, and I always try to take the middle ground because I don't want to be as angry as I get with the medicalized model of birth that's taken over. I don't want to attack people personally. So I always have to remember and remind myself that guess what? It's also women that are demanding the drugs, and it's now considered a maternal choice. In fact, that goes back in history to when the Twilight drugs, in the textbooks in 1940s, drugs were contraindicated in the obstetric textbooks of 1940s, and it is women who demanded to have drugs.
Because
and
they
it
were
even had to go to the Pope. The Pope had to say it's okay for a woman to suffer or not to suffer in childbirth. And the woman who was the biggest leader of the Twilight sleep, she died giving birth under Twilight. The Twilight drug, the knock 'em out, drag 'em out era.
So, but
so it's women. It's consumer driven.
But
people need to do the research.
But to put this in context, these women were also birthing on their backs, you know, under constant invasive supervision by strangers coming in the room. This is not conducive to an easy birth. You know, the reason they started using these Twilight drugs, which, by the way, the Twilight drug is a This is a little known fact, but apparently the majority of American native-born people were imprinted with something called twilight sleep. It's a mixture of morphine and scopolamine, which is belladonna, which is a hallucinogenic similar to atropine, I guess.
Well, its label use is for like air flight or something for.
Well, but in the doses they use, it's way beyond that.
But scopolamine is, one of those drugs that are used off-label. It's approved by the.
Now,
but
when I was a
CDC,
when I was
but it's
a,
not approved for that use.
When I was a kid, okay, I took some of this stuff, and it's not pleasant. Okay, when I was in junior high school, I got hold of some belladonna, and I don't recommend it.
I gave birth once under scopolamine, and I was tied down. Because I was hallucinating, and then they have to give you drugs. That was my first birth experience.
So, but the reason there was the demand for it in the first place was because birth had become so traumatic under the medical model that women were just they were coming out of the delivery room totally traumatized, and you know.
Well, they were separated from their babies, like during the ether days, the Apgar score. I'm sorry, there's so many things to talk about with this. The Apgar score was developed by Virginia Apgar, and she was an anesthesiologist, and she was administering ether, and she just took it upon herself and created this on her own for her own use because there were so many babies and mothers who were being overdosed and also dying from ether. Overdoses of ether. So it was just her own little scale so that she could determine how serious it was. So the Apgar score was not even normed, but it was developed for drugged mothers and babies. But instead of saying, wow, this can't be good, I mean, we were talking about cord clamping earlier. Cord clamping came out of that, the early cord clamping, because they needed to get the baby over and resuscitate, and the mother was out anyway, so there was no bonding going on. But see, they also needed to stop, they didn't want any more blood with ether in it. Transferring from the placenta to the baby, because the baby, you know, the dosage is already for an adult woman, so this baby's already overdosed, and so if you had to cut the cord early.
See, this is just strains credulity. I mean, these people are apparently they're assuming that nature is somehow inherently pathological, and people don't know how to give birth. You know, it's just the reverse. They instead of requiring proof that a given medical intervention is actually beneficial as opposed to just convenient or economical or whatever, they're apparently requiring proof that nature knows what it's doing. And you know, this is epitomized in the cord clamping controversy. There's more research that is still not filtered down to the street, that early cord clamping is very injurious to the child, and this has been known for centuries. And yet they still do it. This is why I call this paper Munchausen Obstetrics, is because medicine is creating a crisis situation for which they can sell the treatments, you know, the remedies, and so they come out looking like heroes, you know, the doctors, and I have to question whether there's a psychological. Some kind of psychopathology going on in the doctors and nurses that require them that compels them to create these crises for which they come up with the remedies. I really have to question what's going on in their heads when they do these things.
It's not just their heads, but it's their bodies, because every one of us, every single one of us, has imprinted in our early brain that was online during labor and birth in the early hours after birth. The experience is imprinted on our brain, and we act it out over and over and over. It's pre-verbal, it's unconscious, and this is very well documented and researched within the pre- and perinatal psychology field, and there's the Association for Pre- and Perinatal Psychology and Health at www.birthpsychology.com that have been around. These people have been around. We've had Dr. Chamberlain on, and he co-founded that organization 25 years ago. There, in Europe and in the United States, there is research showing that the experience of birth is profoundly impacting us. And so, yes, when people go into obstetrics and nursing, and even midwives are just as guilty, in quotes, of doing this. They are acting out. Gloria LeMay said it beautifully last week. I wanted to get more into that when she talked about if she has to do something, if she has to be in there getting the attention, that's about her stuff. Mm-hmm. And so you don't really start to see this in most people are born in the hospital. They only see hospital births on TV. They only experience hospital births.
And they're scared to death from what they see on TV.
Yeah, and so it's when you get out of the hospital and you start to see home births and birth center births and midwifery births out of the hospital that you start to see the really subtle intricacies. It's sort of like if you have birth in a dish and you stick it under the microscope, and hospital birth, you're looking at hospital birth, and we see that as normal now. But if you start to, like, you know, fine-tune your magnification and you take away all of these things in the hospital that they do, and then you just watch a home birth, you start to see, like, the really fine details of birth and just how impactful it is. It's like I can't even think of an analogy right now, but do you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
you look at hospital birth and it's like, oh, we think that's normal, but most people haven't seen normal.
The process of birth is profoundly intricate. They don't have a clue. You know, it's like with the breast milk, and the stem cells in the breast milk. They only recently found out about this, but they've been selling, you know, baby junk food in the form of formula for decades now, and they sell it, or they give it away in hospitals to new mothers at a time when it's very disruptive to the if the new mother is clueless enough to use it, it disrupts the initiation of lactation. This is the crucial time period when the mother's body is ready to start breastfeeding, but if the baby doesn't start breastfeeding, the breasts dry up and it becomes harder and harder. And still, hospitals are taking kickbacks for distributing free formula at maternity wards, and this is completely unconscionable. This is outrageous, frankly.
Janice just left me a message. I just wanted to add, because I always have to add this. Even with you, I have to add this. You were saying the mother's ready to breastfeed. It's the baby's birth.
Yes, it's the
baby is ready to breastfeed. The baby has to breastfeed. The baby, the baby needs to be in the mother's arms. The baby needs to be drug free. The mother needs to be not under the influence of drugs. It's the most important thing. She can get in trouble for drinking any other time she's taking care of her child, driving a car, going to work, but giving birth, she's under the influence, and the baby is ready to breastfeed. And the baby, when left alone, when the mother and the baby are left alone, the mother will touch the baby. They will make eye contact. They have to make eye contact in order to have a meaningful connection that will ensure that baby's not just the physical survival, but his emotional, spiritual survival. He has to connect with his mother and make eye contact. And she needs to touch his head and kiss his head, not hats, not nobody else touching the baby, but the baby in about 30 minutes will start to crawl and grunt, and he will crawl to her breast just like every other mammal on the planet. He will crawl to her breast and attach himself. Mm-hmm. And that is like the most profound thing. If we wanted to change this planet, we would begin to protect that mother-child bonding.
Yes.
And we would create human beings who know that there is gentle touch, that my mother is there, that she is going to meet my needs. When I cry, when I'm hungry, she's going to be there.
Plus that sense of accomplishment. It's the first, you know, the baby initiates the birth, the whole birthing process. But, you know, as far as post-birth, it's the first affirmation that the baby gets if he or she is allowed to crawl to the breast and latch on by itself. That is a hell of an accomplishment, and it's a...
Well, not only that, it completes a neural circuit in mm-hmm. the brain.
Mm-hmm.
The baby starts labor. The baby's body, brain knows when he or she is ready and sends the message to the mother, a hormonal message, mm-hmm. and it starts the process. And it doesn't just start the day of labor. I mean, it's going on at different levels for weeks.
It also completes the circuit in the mother as well.
It completes a neural circuit in mm-hmm. the baby's brain, mm-hmm. but it completes the circuit with them.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have that sort of attachment, you will not have people who are violent, people who do crime. You will have empathetic, peaceful, connected human beings who are concerned for not only themselves, but the others and the planet. And they will be... My observation is these babies that are being born this way, they are topping the scales. Nobody's looking at it. There's no research to show it because people won't look at. I mean, the mainstream won't do it. But these children, there are totally different weight scales for them when they're breastfed, and there are totally different intellectual
emotional maturity,
developmental scales for them.
Yes. So what's wrong with allowing that to happen? I mean, what really, seriously, any doctors out there? You know, what is wrong with allowing nature to create an optimal human being? But getting back to something you mentioned a minute ago.
Wow.
You were mentioning the fetal monitor.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really shocked to find out that these fetal monitors that they attach to the baby's head, they involve actually screwing a metal screw into the skull of the baby.
Mm-hmm.
You know, while it's still in the
babies,
womb.
Can you imagine these soft little heads never felt anything but the inside of the uterus?
And they get these
strangers.
These stainless steel
doing this.
Stainless steel sterilized screws that they actually screw into the baby's head. And I have to wonder what kind of lunatic would think that this is a good idea.
And that the baby isn't affected by it.
It's
doesn't
it's,
remember
it's
it.
Absolute lunacy, absolutely outrageous. I mean, if a baby was able to defend itself, you know, at birth, none of this would happen. The baby depends on the parents to have the common sense to come to its aid in its hour of need, and the parents have everything they need to do this, and it's only through their unfounded irrational trust in authority figures that they have been conditioned with throughout their entire lives. This is the only thing that keeps parents disempowered. And it's time for parents to stand up for the rights of their babies. Babies have human rights. They are not meat. They are not passive, you know, pounds of flesh to be manipulated and probed and poked and suctioned and cut. And, you know, tied down and tortured, essentially, is what they do. You know, all these things are completely beyond the pale. Absolutely beyond the pale.
You know, and what you've described with the baby, well, I believe that the reason why people are not able to protect their babies, the reason I've spent 2 years interviewing and studying and documenting men's stories who stand there in shock and they can't defend or protect their partner and their baby, and any place else on the planet, they would be outraged. They would be roaring tigers. They would never let anybody harm their baby that way. But for some reason, in the medical profession, in the medical model of birth, that has been happening. And so my question is starting to shape up very nicely. The answer is it goes back to when we were talking about the medical professional and them acting out their stuff. Birthing men and women are also acting out their own baby's trauma, their own experience of birth. Because when you're just think, if you're a man and you're as a baby, you were induced, your labor was induced, so you didn't even get to start this biological process.
Yes.
That's supposed to end up in a neural connection with yourself and your brain.
Totally disempowering to the baby, because the normal situation is that the baby initiates the birth.
Yeah, and then when you're induced, there's often the horrible contractions that are why women fear birth.
Pit to distress. We need to mention pit to distress.
You just did.
Okay. people need to go on our blog, thoughtcrimeradio.blogspot.com, and look at our links. There's a link to an article I wrote some time ago called Munchausen Obstetrics. And this...
Somebody didn't turn their phone off.
Yeah, sorry about that. Pit to distress is apparently a very common thing in American obstetrical practice, where they deliberately overdose the mother with an induction drug.
And the baby.
And the baby, of course.
Every time you're talking out there, you, Rich, anybody out there, anytime you find yourself talking about the mother this, the mother that in birth, just remember, and the baby.
Yeah.
The baby's experiencing what the mother got and experienced.
So they deliberately overdose the mother with Pitocin in order to deliberately create the conditions for an obstetrical emergency so that they can do a cesarean, because they just don't have the patience to do a normal birth.
And it's beyond, there's so many factors.
It's traumatic. It's severely traumatic.
Well, our show is very different right now than it would have been if Dr. Fishbein was on, but we wanted to talk about that, the whole climate of obstetrics, because he's very, 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 very outspoken right now about why these things are happening, and he has a very low C-section rate. But I wanted to add, you know, there's the induction, and then the baby is drugged. And then the mother is supine. She's drugged, and she's not. She's
totally passive.
She's lost connection with her baby, and it's being done to her. So then, when the baby comes out, they often do all these things that we know now, scientifically, do not even really support a better outcome. All the suctioning, the blue bulb, the suctioning, the scrubbing of the face, all these things. The baby's harshly treated, and then the baby doesn't. The baby's cord is clamped, so the baby doesn't get the placental blood, doesn't get the blood cells, the stem cells it should. Then it's taken over and is crying and crying and crying and crying for the mother. You can tell babies, their little fists are up and their faces are scrunched and they're crying and they're saying, stop it, stop it, stop it. The mother is numb over there on the other side of the room. The father stands there. They put scissors in his hand. You know, before they take him over there, they've put the scissors in his hand and said, cut the cord. And he separates the baby from the mother. That is an unresearched trauma. But then this baby, after all of this, is often taken to be weighed and cleaned off. And the reason the baby's cleaned off is because it's a biohazard for the medical people. At home birth, people will wait 2 days, even 10 days, before they give a baby a bath. Because it's traumatic. It's done within the first hour and minutes of life when the baby needs to be with the mama.
Yes.
And so then you take this baby, and he's down in the nursery. and then...
Crying his eyes out.
And then a few days later, he's circumcised, which is the most horrible...
Or within hours, sometimes
trauma,
within hours.
The most horrible trauma that can be done to a human boy. And so, yes, when the man is at the birth of his baby, that part of his brain that experienced all that, that nobody ever acknowledged, he never had any opportunity to integrate this experience or heal this experience. He is in what we call a pre-verbal state, and he is incapable of stopping the abuse of his baby. And it goes on and on, because you know what he learned in that experience as a baby? We're in control.
Powerlessness, yes. We are in control. You do what we say, or we'll torture you. This is what we can do to you.
Oh, you don't even... you know what? It the torture happens before that.
Well...
I mean, it's not like a baby comes out and says, I am not going to do that. Mm-mm. No, it happens. It happens
anyway. Yeah.
Yeah.
It happens regardless.
I mean, it's a situation of torture.
This is child abuse on a big scale, on a massive industrial scale, is going on in this country right now under our very noses, okay? Anybody listening out there, this is a human rights crisis, a catastrophe, an ongoing, you know, disaster. And it's sowing the seeds for just all so many of the social problems that this country is experiencing, everything from drug abuse to child abuse to divorce. You know, so much of this stuff can be traced.
Absent to fathers.
Absent fathers, yes. I mean,
because the father, like the example of the cutting of the cord.
Mm-hmm.
The mother's body has kept this baby growing and thriving, and she and her baby are separated prematurely. It was one thing when they were drugged and it was done by hospital people, but now, under the guise of fathers being allowed in the birthing room to be a part of it, fathers are cutting the cord. They are separating their baby prematurely. The baby is not ready to be separated. We do not even know. Just like breast milk, we are going to be, I guarantee you, within the next 10 years, we are going to find out phenomenal things about the placenta and why we have harmed babies physically, health-wise, psychologically, emotionally, and spiritually because of clamping the cord and because the father has come in. He's in shock. They tell him, cut the cord, and he cuts the cord. And you know, fathers now, like, that's their big badge of honor. I got to cut the cord. But there's no consideration of how that happened. And they men don't have any sense of, like, this harmed me. This harmed me. Women feel violated, and they don't even articulate it. It's such a fast emotional experience. I think that's how it keeps on begetting itself, is because you go home and then you have this, oh, you're so happy, you have this baby, this sweet baby, and then
you sweep it under the rug. You sort of,
well, it, yeah, and then and then it simmers down there.
Although the woman, you know, oftentimes we have an epidemic of postpartum depression going on too, you know,
and violence and divorce,
yes,
and all kinds of addictions, shopping, running, porn, alcohol, drugs,
yeah,
anger, violence,
absolutely,
I mean, raging,
and so much of that
our
stuff.
Our families are really hurting.
Yes, and so much of that stuff can be, you know, the divorce, the drug addiction, the violence, a lot of that can be traced just to circumcision. And circumcision still happens to a majority of the babies in this country.
50%.
And the majority of those circumcisions...
Higher here in Missouri.
Yeah. The majority of those circumcisions are performed without any anesthetic. There's a lot of misconceptions going on.
I would like to say, I don't care if they have an anesthetic.
Well, yeah, I mean,
it's like torture. It's torture.
Yeah.
And so if they're anesthetized, if we get them drunk, and you know, if a guy gets a girl drunk first, you know, I mean, she didn't really feel
before
it.
She
you
gets
know?
Raped.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, it's along the same lines. It's the most horrific.
But it's not just the trauma. Yes, it's
a human rights violation.
It's not just torture. It is the amputation of a sensory organ. It's like gouging out your eyeball. Okay, you lose your depth perception, and that's what circumcision does to sex. You lose your depth perception. You know.
Well, and yeah, we spent 5 weeks talking about that, and then I'm not sure what date it is. I think November 9th.
Mm-hmm.
Steve, what's his name, Sabato?
Svoboda.
Svoboda, who started the human rights, the Organization for Human Rights of Children, is going to be
attorney
here.
Attorney for the Rights of the Child.
And I see that somebody's calling in on the studio line. And if you are a caller, or you'd like to talk to us on the air, you need to call 443-TALK, which is 8255, 443-8255, if you'd like to get in on the discussion here.
So, but I about circumcision, I did want to say that it's more than just the trauma of the actual event. You know, when you amputate the physiological mechanism by which parents bond, you know, which is sex. Sex is supposed to be a spiritual, transcendental, you know, all devouring experience. It's supposed to create a lasting bond between the parents, you know, so that they stay together for however long it takes for that baby to mature into an independent human being.
And I would add that you don't have to stay together physically, but you can stay together and both be parents.
Even that is missing. You know, it's the father isn't just, you know, physically missing, but many fathers don't even have an emotional bond with the mother or the baby. You know, they just sort of wander off and they lose. They lose big time because they don't even know. They don't even know what they're missing. You know, when you sever that emotional connection, it really is a type of lobotomization. And in fact, there is research in psychiatric journals showing how circumcision causes a neural reorganization of the brain that makes men more pliable and easy to control by authority figures. And, you know, as far as the author of these articles, this is a good thing, you know, because these people are Nazis, okay? I mean, there are some psychiatrists out there who are frankly psychopathological, sociopaths, you know. In any other, if they didn't have medical degrees, they would probably be in jail, okay? Seriously. I'm serious.
You are going to so get us in trouble.
It's true. I mean, there's a lot of Well, I mean, we've just pointed out how birth trauma tends to create emotional states in the victim that lead to its repetition when they become adults. And so, obviously, this is a prime case of some kind of psychological pathology going on, and it's totally unappreciated in the medical field. And so we're here to point out the emperor's new clothes. You know,
I was just thinking, what can we do? Like, what are these new clothes?
It's just a fig leaf over a monster is what it is.
Well, if you'd like to get in on this conversation, actually only have 10 minutes, but it's 443-8255. You know, and when Janine was talking about that experience, I had that experience my whole life with my son, that feeling of just overwhelming love. She named it for me, that I have this neuropeptide, you know, connection with him.
We are the embodiments of spirit, okay? When we talk about how much we value love, you know, these things have physiological counterparts. And if we do not support the physiological basis for the formation of love, we lose out. It never materializes. And the neurons, there are networks in the brain of neurons called mirroring neurons, which form they create the physiological basis for empathy. And if there's one thing that this country needs desperately, it is a sense of community and empathy among our citizens, because we're all wandering around miserable, wondering why we don't have the relationships that we need to be happy. And so much of this, seriously, I mean, to the uninitiated, this sounds like we're making much too big a deal out of this, but we're talking about imprinting. Imprinting happens in all mammals, and it affects the baby for his or her entire life. So this is an emergency. Okay, mayday, mayday, mayday. Let me just try to stress that we're not just a couple of old hippies, you know, making a big deal out of nothing. We have the science on our side. We know what we're talking about. We know more about birth than the average obstetrician, frankly.
Natural birth.
I mean, if you look at a dog giving birth, you will find out more about birth than what they teach in the medical
school. And I have a couple of callers that I want to take, but I just wanted to add, I think I lost my train of thought. It was about natural birth. Hello, caller, you're on the air.
Oh.
You need to shut up your radio volume.
Yeah, it's okay now?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, my question, you know, it's just a pre-verbal trauma, and, you know, I mean, I was standing there. It was right after the birth of my son was circumcised.
Right.
I mean, right then. I mean, they just did it. They took him away from, you know. And, of course, I also have other preverbal traumas that I've had to deal with. But, and then, we think about, what's your pal there? What's his name? Rick?
Rick, yes.
Rich.
Mm-hmm. Rich,
yeah.
Sorry.
Saying, why are we in Afghanistan? Why do we let our boys go there?
That's exactly the question. You know,
I mean, we just stand there like I did at my son's birth. You know, you just stand there and go, okay.
I can tell you why I let my son go. Because he is a soul that came here on his own journey, and I had to let him live his journey. And that's a short version to a very long process that I came to know.
But wasn't there some amount of coercion from the state?
From the state?
From the government.
Oh,
no, I'm sorry.
No, my son was born to me and his father.
Okay.
And that was my point of, like, I did all these attachment parenting things.
Uh-huh.
And he had everything that's right. Him going to war made me question everything about my work. And the only thing I come back to is that he had this hospital birth. And I believe that he chose us. His father was a conscientious objector in Vietnam. And I've been an activist for peace and peaceful childbearing and child care for my whole life.
So he wasn't stalked by Army recruiters in high school like so many people.
No, I had to keep him away. At age 5, he started talking about going, but that's because his father was Hungarian and told him all about the whole political scene over there, and he has a very different perspective here. He doesn't have the mainstream American history version of what went on, and he, from the very early, very clearly had a plan and a mission. Age 5, he was calling himself G.I. Joe, and there it came from nowhere. By the time he was 9, he was studying World War II, and he knew all the fighter pilots and the battles and why they did what they did. And by 12, he wanted to be an officer, and by 16, he was going through the recruiters.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an act of love for me. I read the book called The Soul's Code that said that confirmed what I believe, that I'm a vessel for this other soul to come through me. And it's a very profound experience to be a woman, to bring through a soul. And then you have the most profound love for this being, but you have to let go of them. And The Soul's Code says that we come in with the plan of what we're going to be, and we choose the parents that are going to facilitate that. So
I know when my boys were little, my wife was saying, we wouldn't buy them guns to play with them. I mean, I grew up playing guns. Of course, I have nothing to do with them now as an adult, but they heard their story is, that they chewed their toast in the shape of pistols.
For what?
Well, they she wouldn't let them, we wouldn't give them guns or anything.
Yeah,
but
they would make
pistols themselves.
Yeah, they do it. And by the time
and the culture is just there. I mean, and I don't know. That's the problem. There isn't a way for us to protect them from it other than to actively try to change our culture.
Well, what our caller or our guest a few weeks ago, Janice, what she said and what I've been processing since then, I've been really thinking about this week about how, yes, we can stop war, and we can stop war if we begin to welcome the souls into this planet wanted and loved and supported and throughout gestation. And it's really important that people do their healing work before they have babies. It's really important that men are present there. When men are present, fully present, not this version of what the hospital says present, but
my daughter is going to do the attachment parenting and everything, which I'm so happy.
I mean,
she found it on her own, and I'm just
it's a
so
hard,
glad that she did.
It's a hard journey to do attachment parenting in our present society, but I think that that's what we can do to stop
one baby at a time.
And you know what? She needs to research the self-attachment, the breast crawl, and make sure that wherever she is, whether it's a midwife or a doctor, because they don't always know it, but she needs to have that moment. She and her partner, her husband, and that baby need to have that moment after birth, and that baby come to her, and it's quiet, and they're connected, and they make eye contact.
Well, I was so happy and proud to hear you say, don't you need some sleep? No, I'm not going to let you have my baby. I'm so happy that you were able to do that.
Well, thank you for calling.
Yeah. Okay, and I really enjoyed the show.
Thanks.
Thank you.
All right.
We had someone else that wanted to call in, but I don't see the...
Getting back to the circumcision issue, because I keep harping on that, because it's such an outrage.
Well, if people would get what an outrage it is, and then you will work backwards, then they'll go, oh my God, the suctioning, all this scrubbing,
yeah, yeah.
All
it's
this
just
stuff
part of the is, constellation.
Is part of mm-hmm. the torture.
Yes, but the... as far as you know, the connection between divorce and circumcision, circumcision removes the primary erogenous zone of the male body. It's called the Frenar band, F-R-E-N-A-R, and you need to Google that and look at the anatomy of the Frenar band. It is chock full of erogenous nerves that are designed to send the mind and the brain into heaven, you know, during sex. That's what it's for. It's for creating this over-the-top animalistic bond between the parents. And we are throwing this away. We are undermining our families. We are creating havoc in men's lives, men who spend a lifetime, you know, personally myself, just to get maybe not too personal, hopefully, but I always knew something was wrong with me when I was a kid. I knew that there was, you know, something missing that I could never really fully satisfy a woman. And I knew this when I was a kid, and I didn't know why. It's just something that I knew intuitively, and it was only after I found out, you know, did some research on circumcision that I realized what it was that, you know, that I had been raped, I'd been sexually tortured, and they had removed something precious to me.
And we have another caller. And we're going to have to wrap up here shortly. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Yes. I would like to see some information about long-term studies of the impact of what you're saying and how it affects children after the age of 2 or 3. I hear a lot of anecdotal information, but not a lot of hardcore information.
Well, Dr. William Emerson is a pioneer in this field, and his website is emersonbirthrx.com, and he's coming out with a book. And
well, that's one person. What I've seen is a lot of parents. I guess I am concerned about people focusing so much on the child that their marriage suffers as a result of it.
That's and part I of trauma bonding.
I guess I don't understand what you're saying. Could you explain that to me?
The trauma bonding?
Yes. What do you mean?
Well, when a woman is in that, like I've described, where the baby's separated, she's traumatized, and so is her baby, so their connection is always traumatized, and she can be either unattentive or over-attentive to the baby throughout life.
And the support for what you're saying is where?
We'll post it on our blog, which is www.thoughtcrimeradioblog.blogspot.com. And yeah. I'm sorry, but we are out of time.
Yeah, follow the links on the stuff that's linked from our webpage, and you will find that there are scholarly studies pointing all this stuff out. We are not just shooting our wads here.
Yeah, and
I do come up from a scholarly background, and I just don't see it. And I see a lot of trauma from the other end, where women are blaming themselves for not attaching properly to their babies, kind of like the Dr. Spock area.
Yeah, we need to blame the system that has robbed women of that, and I'm really sorry, but the tech guys are waiting for us to leave the air room. We've really enjoyed talking to you. I appreciate you.
Thank
callers
you.
And I'd like to play a different song than we usually do. It's Baby Boy by John Lennon, and it's in honor of my son Laszlo, who
come home soon.
Yep, safely.